If they asked me, I could write a book.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, it's classical music at the Kravis, a drive-in movie moves into Wynwood, Chef Norman Van Aken, and our Florida Keys calendar. The 30th anniversary of the Miami Book Fair International, presented by the Center for Literature and Theater at Miami-Dade College, takes place November 17th through the 24th on the Wolfson campus, 300 Northeast 2nd Avenue in downtown Miami. Director of Programs, Lisette Mendez, joins us to discuss the many events of the nation's finest and largest literary event. Lisette, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, tell me, this is your biggest event, but what else does the center accomplish throughout the year?
Well, we do a lot of other author presentations throughout the year. We work a lot with college students at Miami-Dade College, bringing authors into the classrooms, providing books for the students to read and integrate into the curriculum. We also do a lot of programming for children, including one program, Read to Learn Books for Free, where we gather books, both gently used and new children's books from people in the community, and we redistribute them to children who don't have as much access as other kids. We started that back in May. We have a theater component in Spanish. Prometeo Theater also has been in the community for 40 years, and we took it on about 10 years ago when the center first started. There's a lot going on.
You have events going on year-round,
yes,
sounds like.
Yes, we do.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Now, you've got a really great opening, November 17th, just a few days from now. And tell me about it and about the esteemed author joining you for that opening.
Well, it's going to be really spectacular this year. It's our 30th. We wanted to celebrate in style. And so we're having an inaugural ceremony at Gusman Center for the Performing Arts in the beautiful Olympia Theater. And it's going to be really spectacular. It starts at 5:30 p.m. And we'll have a performance group from Spain. They are both musicians and dancers that will perform different kinds of music and different kinds of dancing style from all over Spain. And they are coming just for this inaugural ceremony. And so that's going to be quite beautiful and very impressive. And it's all free, open to everyone in the community. I think that's one of the great things about Miami Book Fair, that there's really a little bit of something for everyone. And so much of it is free or almost free. And that starts at 5:30 p.m. We're really lucky that we have representatives of the royal family of Spain with us that day to open the fair, to inaugurate the fair. You know, we're celebrating Spain at this year's fair, and a lot of authors are coming from Spain, a lot of performance groups, including Sweet España, a lot of other kinds of flavors from Spanish culture, including we have a special dinner with a guest chef. We have a tablao every night, which is dancing and tapas. But that inaugural ceremony is going to be really special. Sweet España is one of the premier groups for dancers and singers of traditional Spanish music, and they'll be there that night to open the fair. And then after that, we have Dan Brown, who I think everyone in South Florida at one time or another has asked me, when is Dan Brown coming to the fair? When is Dan Brown? And here we actually have Dan Brown this year for all of those fans. And his fans are legion. And he will be talking about his new book, Inferno.
Marvelous. Now, mark your calendar. Sunday, November 17th. It starts at 5:30?
5:30 p.m.
Uh-huh. It's free and open to the public. I hope every seat is taken.
Yes. If I weren't working, I wouldn't miss it.
You'll be working.
Yep.
Now, so many events and programs connected with this year's 30th Miami Book Fair International, of course, presented by the Center for Literature and Theater at Miami-Dade College. Let's start with Evenings With.
Wow, yeah, we have quite a lineup. We have two every night from Monday on with Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe. A lot of people know him from his TV show. Erica Zhang and Jennifer Weiner in conversation following the next day. A favorite at the Miami Book Fair for many years, Pat Conroy, will be our Wednesday author. Cassandra King, his wife, also presenting her own book. Sherman Alexi, incredible young writer who is so prolific. Poetry, short stories, novels. He's written a screenplay for a film. Native American author from the Northwest that doesn't get down to South Florida very often, but every chance I get to bring him, I do, because he's really one of the best young authors today in our country. Raisa Aslan, who came out recently with a book about the historical Jesus, that's gotten a lot of
controversy.
Press,
like, yes, yeah,
very controversial, but really an incredible scholar. He's a professor and he's been doing research about this time period for a very long time. And this is an incredible book. Carl Hyacin, South Florida favorite,
always fun,
also with us. And then we have Wally Lamb, Terry McMillan. There's really an author for every taste in literature.
You tell me, 500 authors. Wow.
Yes.
That's just phenomenal.
Yes. I think two who are going to be very popular this year are the Congressman John Lewis. He's going to be with us to talk about his book, March, about the March on Washington. A lot of people know him as really a pioneer in the, you know, in the movements for social justice for the past 60, 70 years at this point. And Angelica Houston, another very beloved, for slightly different reasons maybe, but another beloved figure in American culture.
November 22nd.
Yes, at 8 p.m.
Now, we want to talk about the Generation Genius Days because, of course, during any book fair, you bring the family, you bring the kids.
You know, Generation Genius Days and the Children's Alley section of the book fair are very important to me. I think we have to nurture the next generation of readers, the next generation of thinkers and doers. But, you know, we have to start when they're young, when they're babies.
True.
You know,
true.
Otherwise, you know, it's kind of cliche. You know, children are the future. Children are the folks that are going to lead our country. And I think it's incumbent upon an organization like ours to really make sure that we have a varied, rich program for kids so that they can equate reading and books and everything that comes along with that with fun and, you know, things that are not just chores like homework could be sometimes.
Sure. You want to go to miamibookfair.com for more information. So much information on that wonderful website. And of course, the book fair is all over social media, on Twitter at Miami Book Fair, on Facebook at Miami Book Fair, and the center at MDC on Tumblr.
Yes.
Let's not forget the kitchen. This is the second year for that program.
Yes, and it's growing. Throughout Book Fair, we've always had a lot of chefs with cookbooks to come and talk about their books. And we took that a little bit further with the opening of the Culinary Institute at Miami-Dade College. The Miami Culinary Institute has beautiful facilities, test kitchens, and a beautiful wine theater, the Tuyo restaurant, which oversees downtown Miami and the Bay. And so we partnered with them. I mean, we're all part of the same family to use those facilities during the fair. And a number of the authors presenting cookbooks are going to be doing cooking demos and tastings during the weekend. So our very own Norman Van Aken, who leads Tuyo restaurant, and he's very well known in Miami for a number of his restaurants here. And but we also have authors who are coming from outside. Patricia Wells, whom everybody really loves for her French cooking. Ingrid Hoffman, who does both Spanish foods, you know, Hispanic foods and traditional American taste, mixes that to create her own style of cooking, very much with a healthy twist, as she says. So she's going to be doing a cooking demo and a tasting as well. We have two special dinners that are going to be on Tuesday of the book fair and also on Thursday of the book fair. And Norman Van Aken is going to partner up with two of our visiting chefs. One is Scott Conant, who is on TV, on the Food Network, and a couple of other TV stations that run cooking shows. The second dinner, Norman will create alongside Bruno Oiteza. He is a chef coming from Spain as part of our celebration of Spanish foods. That's part of the larger celebration of Spanish culture at the book fair. And both of these dinners are ticketed, but they're affordable considering the fact that these are two chefs that are coming in to visit and are participating in our program.
Lisette Mendez is director of programs for the book fair, and she is our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. Once again, for more information, miamibookfair.com is the place to go initially, and so much going on. You know, I love the hundreds of authors you have, and I also love the music you always bring together every single year, and you have the World Stage, which is going to be located on the corner of Northeast 2nd Avenue and 3rd Street. You've got the Wolfson Jazz Ensemble, directed by Mike DeLito. Peter Baton will be performing, Dr. Ed Calle and Friends, the Jose Negroni Trio, the band formerly known as the Rock Bottom Remainders. That inspires a question. Huh? What?
Well, I think in Miami, a lot of people, if not everyone, is familiar with the Rock Bottom Remainders. And actually, they broke up earlier this year. Sam Barry and his wife were the founders of the Rock Bottom Remainders, along with all of the authors who participate.
Mm-hmm. Dave and all of that.
Right. And her name was Kathy Kamen Goldmark. She passed away last year.
I'm sorry.
Of breast cancer. And so the band really decided that without Kathy, Kathy was the heart of the band, and they decided to break up. And actually, they wrote a beautiful book. All of them contributed essays and stories. It's called Hard Listening, and the book is available for sale, and they will all be at the fair talking about this book. The book was written and is being sold to raise funds to pay for the very high medical bills that Kathy unfortunately had at the time of her death. And so they'll be at the fair to talk about the book, and I think, again, another group whose fans are legion are the authors who make up the Rock Bottom Remainders. And the reason they got back together is because of the fair's 30th anniversary. They've been at the fair since the very beginning, and they couldn't let such a significant event go by without playing again together.
And that's Saturday, November the 23rd at 6 p.m. They've also invited, this is amazing, Roger McGuinn to perform with them of the Byrds. So that is magnificent. So much more going on, of course, for the 30th annual Miami Book Fair International. Once again, go to the website, miamibookfair.com, for complete information. And this year they celebrate the culture and literature of Spain. And we want to thank Lisette Mendez, Director of Programs, for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat. Lisette, we'll see you in the streets.
Yes, thank you so much. See you at the fair.
Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. You're listening to South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, we'll hear about Wynwood's new drive-in, Chef Norman Van Akins's A Word on Food, and Andy Newman's Florida Keys calendar. Now, our classical arts contributor, Charles Greenfield, casts his gaze up north to Palm Beach's Kravis Center.
While concertgoers in South Florida are somewhat familiar with the classical programs emanating from the Tri-County's two major venues, Miami's Arts Center and Fort Lauderdale's Broward Center for the Performing Arts, there is less publicity and information concerning West Palm Beach's Kravis Center for the Performing Arts, a 5.4-acre property located at 701 Okeechobee Boulevard, adjacent to the popular City Place shopping and restaurant complex. The Kravis Center first opened its doors in September 1992, and its grand gala opening in late November of that year featured the Florida Philharmonic Orchestra under conductor James Judd, Master of Ceremonies Burt Reynolds, soprano greats Roberta Peters and Leontine Price, famed violinist Isaac Stern, jazz immortal Ella Fitzgerald, actress Faith Prince, comedian Lily Tomlin, and the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Now in its 22nd season, the Kravis Center packs a large punch with its classical programming in the Alexander Dreyfus Concert Hall. For the 2013-14 season, orchestras, conductors, and artists include violinists Itzhak Perlman and Joshua Bell, the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra and Zubin Mehta, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra and Leonard Slatkin, the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra under Joanne Folletta, and Russian pianist Olga Kern, a South Florida favorite. To give more perspective on the season and the mission of the Kravis Center, I recently spoke to Sharon McDaniel, Regional Arts Programming Associate and host for the center's pre-performance discussions. Sharon McDaniel, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you so much, Charles. It's a pleasure.
Sharon, first, what is the mission statement of the Kravis Center? And concerning your classical program, how do you see it as being different, the same, as the ones in Fort Lauderdale and Miami?
Basically, the Kravis Center's mission is to schedule a diverse range of national and international artists and companies of the highest artistic level. In the regional art series in particular, we are bringing some of the top-notch orchestras, recitalists, soloists, and frankly, we're the only ones in Palm Beach County who are able to give this wide a range, meaning 16 concerts each season, that feature the top of the best of the best.
And I hear that the center has a pre-performance discussion right before, of course, the performances themselves.
Absolutely. I'm the one that gives those usually. And basically what I want to do is place people in the living room of the composer with the coffee cup, creating a ring on the piano and letting people know what that composer's thinking of at the time. Place it in history so they know what's going on outside his living room and how all of that works into the music that they'll hear that night.
Well, I'm sure Steinway doesn't mind. Now, the Venezuela Symphony Orchestra was scheduled for November 21st, but has been canceled. And the great violinist Itzhak Perlman comes to your stage December 16th and 18th. What can we expect from one of South Florida's favorite international artists?
Well, you know Maestro Perlman. He likes to surprise us. He doesn't announce his program as very far ahead, but every time we've had him here, and he's a Kravis audience favorite, he's presented some absolutely splendid programs, and the encores are incredible, too.
Yes, his encores are quite special, and we have people dancing in the aisles, I hear.
Absolutely. He's really so charming. His personality comes through the music, and that's what people really love about those specialties.
Now, you start the new year, January 5th, with Duo Amal, which is an interesting Palestinian-Israeli piano duo of Bishara Haroni and Yaron Kohlberg. Interesting concept of two very different nations, usually in conflict, but here in the arts, together.
Absolutely, and we thought it was such a wonderful concept, that idea of Amal being the Arabic word for hope. And these two young men were sort of introduced by Zubin Mehta, one of the great conductors, who himself has been conducting an east-west type of orchestra. So we thought it was time to bring them here. They'll be making their Florida debut.
And they will be doing Stravinsky's Petrushka and Schubert's Fantasia in F minor.
Oh, the Petrushka is such fun. It's a blast to watch pianists play that. They're taking the place of the entire orchestra, and the Stravinsky is actually an arrangement by the composer himself.
Now, the rest of January includes the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra on the 19th and two concerts by the Haifa Symphony Orchestra the 28th and 29th. A brief description of players and works?
Actually, I should warn people, the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra is almost sold out. That's because they're such a popular group. They're an extraordinarily wonderful New York ensemble, and they're bringing with them Nobuyuki Tsujii, who is the young, blind Japanese pianist who just blew everybody away at the 2009 Van Cliburn competition, and he's playing Beethoven's Emperor Concerto. So if they want tickets for that, it's something they should look into pretty quickly.
And the Haifa Symphony Orchestra, quickly, what are they playing?
Haifa is coming with Mozart's 40th Symphony, and they have two different soloists. A young Israeli composer has written a concerto for viola based on melodies from Mount Carmel and from Haifa, where he's from. And we have a piano soloist who's returning to South Florida, Roman Rubinovich, who's playing the Beethoven Symphony No. 3. Not to forget, we're going to hear the Dvorak New World Symphony, and it's an anniversary year for that also, 1893 to 2013.
There you go. And February, very busy month, the 9th and 10th, the Buffalo Philharmonic with its real upcoming conductor, Joanne Folletta. Tell us about this wonderful young conductor.
She is just so marvelous. She's got great creativity, great energy on the podium, and she has really helped to put Buffalo even further on the map. How many times have you listened to American public media or Performance Today? You very often hear the Buffalo Philharmonic because of the great work she does and all those nice CDs she's been releasing of music that we don't normally hear. She's a great credit for that.
Now, the sort of the middle to the end of the season, Leonard Slatkin, Detroit Symphony, February 25, 26, Ravel, Rachmaninoff, Copland, Prokofiev, Tchaikovsky, and the popular and talented Olga Kern.
It's a great pleasure to have her back. She was here right after she won her Van Cliburn gold medal several years ago, and she hasn't been back since, so we're grateful that she's here.
She's doing the Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini, the 25th, and Prokofiev's first piano concerto on the 26th.
Which is a real hoot, because the young Prokofiev decided he was going to break all the rules.
There we go. But the Chamber Orchestra of Kremlin will be there March 13th, and March 16th, Joshua Bell will lead the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, Brahms, and Beethoven.
Absolutely. And again, Academy, because of Joshua, is going to be very limited in tickets at this point. Joshua Bell will be making his first appearance as new music director of the Academy, as well as its violin soloist in the Brahms Concerto, which is just amazing to see him conduct and play that work.
Interesting transition. Some of our older listeners will remember how Ashkenazi went from piano to orchestra,
Absolutely.
And then you finish the season with a huge explosion of sound, Zubin Mehta, Israel Philharmonic, Brahms, and Tchaikovsky, March 24th.
This is, again, such a popular ticket. People actually are on standby for this concert, so people should put in their names immediately if they would like a ticket. He's bringing two wonderful soloists, Pinkas Zuckerman violin and Zuckerman's wife, Amanda Forsyth, cello, and they're doing the Brahms double concerto for violin and cello.
Well, I can understand why tickets would be very, very tight for that. Well, Sharon McDaniel, I want to thank you so much for attending South Florida Arts Beat.
Charles, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
The Raymond F. Kravis Center for the Performing Arts in West Palm Beach has brought a varied and comprehensive series of classical concerts to Palm Beach County for over 21 years. In addition to providing arts education programs, popular music from Broadway, musicals, dances, comedians, and opera, the classical program has often surprised listeners further south in the county by its offerings of outstanding international artists and orchestras. For further information, call 561-832-7469 or go to their website at kravis.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Florida Keys calendar features Andy Newman. Now our film critic Dan Hudak gets retro with the Wynwood District's Blue Starlight Drive-In.
As society becomes more technologically advanced, and little things like writing a letter on paper and looking something up in an actual encyclopedia become bygones of yesteryear, rare are the times when we can sit back and do something that used to be done in the good old days, or for our purposes here, the 1950s. Drive-in movie theaters, at which people could go to an outdoor movie screen, park, attach a speaker to their car, and enjoy Hollywood's latest, peaked in the post-war baby boom era, but tapered out with the advent of mini malls and multiplexes. Although Fort Lauderdale's Swap Shop drive-in is still going strong, it opened the day President Kennedy was assassinated, which is 50 years ago next week, Miami, in contrast, hasn't had a drive-in theater in decades. That is, until now. In Wynwood, next to the O Cinema, now resides the Blue Starlight Mini Urban Drive-In, which officially opened last month. with a focus on classic audience-friendly movies such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, American Graffiti, and more. The theater accommodates 20 to 24 cars per screening, and there are seats near the front for those who want to get out of their cars. Other perks include a rainproof screen, select meal packages that can be brought out to your car, and reserved parking for those who purchase tickets online in advance. We recently sat down with the founder of the Blue Starlight Mini Urban Drive-In, Josh Frank, to learn more. Josh, thank you for joining us on ArtsBeat.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how did this theater come to be?
Well, I grew up in Austin, Texas, and 3.5 years ago, I was looking for something cool to do for my girlfriend at the time. She's now my wife. And I was running this art studio on the east side of Austin. There was an alleyway there, and I set up a little impromptu drive-in for her to show her favorite movie, Grease. And we were back there, just me and her, with a drive-in speaker I'd gotten off eBay attached to the little projector on my roof. And I was sitting there, and it just got me thinking, you know, why hasn't anyone else done a drive-in in an alleyway in the city? And so I went home, and I researched, and it turns out that no one had, you know, no one. And that just led to the idea of why did drive-ins die? Why didn't they ever move closer to where people moved to, which was the city? And then I just decided, you know what, I bet people might find this interesting to do. And so as an experiment, I set one up, you know, for 6 cars in that same alleyway and started the world's first mini urban drive-in. And people kept coming, so I kept it going and moved to bigger and bigger spaces, and it's become something of an institution, the world's first boutique drive-in.
And how did you end up in Miami?
Well, when I married that same woman that I gave the anniversary drive-in to, her family's from Miami, so I decided, she said that she wanted to maybe move here, and she got transferred with her job, and as a small business, you can't really open second locations, you know, unless you live in that location. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll try and keep the Austin one going. We'll move to Miami because her family's here. And that will be my shot to try it in another place. And I couldn't think of a better place in the country to try it, especially when I learned that there hadn't been a drive-in in central Miami.
And not for at least 30 years here in Miami. And not only that, but you're right next to O Cinema in Wynwood, which is a great location. How'd you find the location?
When I first got here, I reached out to some friends that I knew to ask who owned cool properties. And the friend said, well, you got to go check out Wynwood. And there's a guy named David Lombardi who is Mr. Wynwood, you know? And I called him up and I said, hey, my name is Josh, and I invented the world's first mini urban drive-in movie theater, and I'd like to open one in Wynwood. And he said, let's meet up. And we met up, and he said, I got a space. And it just so happened it was one door down from O Cinema. And he said, would you like this space for your little drive-in? And so I called up the people that run O Cinema, and I sat down, and I introduced myself and told them what I did. And I said, you know, do you think there's room for a little drive-in and, you know, in your neck of the woods? And they were very gracious, and they said we should, you know, work together. And I think we're going to, over the next year, create a really cool cinema scene.
Yeah, Kareem and Vivian at O Cinema are smart enough to know that the more film and movie-going attention they can draw to the theater there, the better it is for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone wins.
They've been great. And, I mean, what they're doing is incredible. I mean, they brought the art house cinema, you know, back, you know. From what I understand, they really, you know, were the sounding board for creating this scene. And I'm really glad that I get to be friends with them and that they have been so great.
They and a lot of people down here, the resurgence in art house cinemas in the last 10 years has been really wonderful for Miami culturally. I want to ask you, when I was younger, there were drive-in movie houses where I grew up in Connecticut and over the border in Poughkeepsie, New York. And we would go and, you know, you take your girlfriend, whatever, and you watch the movie. It'd be a double feature. And the difference between that and your theater is that you have the really old school speakers on the side of the window. Whereas for my theaters, when I was doing it, I would just tune to a radio station and play it. was it a necessity to do the old school speakers? Because we're really going back to 50s style with those old school speakers. Why that choice?
Well, we actually have both. But one of the things we found early on is part of what people loved about it was that nostalgia aspect and being able to connect with that history. And so people just get really giddy, you know, when we put the speaker in their window. So that's why we kept that. Yeah.
So you're having a lot of success early on because you just opened, showing audience-friendly classics, your Ghostbusters and Back to the Future type movies. Any plans to show newer films or independent films?
Well, we're not going to do independent films because O Cinema has got that covered and they're doing a great job. We don't do new movies, brand new ones. We like to, you know, we are the first revival house to come to Miami in a while. And we're going to be, you know, tonight starting our launching our new series, which is the Midnight Movie Series, which we're going to be doing 2 to 4 times a month, showing more deep cut stuff and cult classics and things like that. And it's just that's a part of our whole thing is that we're trying to bring back some of the great experiences people had at movie theaters, but it's at a drive-in. And not only is it a drive-in, but it's a drive-in movie theater like none you've ever been to because it's small. 25 cars is the most we can take in a night. So you get a real intimate experience, unlike any other place.
So that's what I was going to ask you. What's an advantage that you offer only regular over regular movie houses? I could think of a couple myself, but are there any others that spring to mind?
Well, I mean, the big one is just you get to feel like it's your night out and that we are there for you. You know, you get a very intimate experience. You're in public and private, we like to say. So you get to have your little world in your car with your date or your family. But you also get to be around other people experiencing one of your favorite movies.
See, to me, the advantage would be not having idiots on their cell phones or the moron talking behind you who you tell to shut up and they don't listen. Like, now at least you're in your own car.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We have very specific rules. Like if you're going to talk on your phone, you got to have your windows up, you know? And you can't, that's the beauty. You can talk on your phone. You just got to have your windows up and you can.
Where would you like the drive-in to grow from? I mean, you accommodate 20 to 24 cars. If I told you in a year, what's your dream scenario? What would it be?
Well, my dream scenario is very similar to what I did in Austin. I'd like to find a second location where I can do 50 to 70 cars, maybe by the beach, maybe with a view of the entire city. That's what we did in Austin. So we had our small little location in kind of the art section, and then we had sort of a bigger one, you know? But I'll always want to keep the small ones because that intimacy, that being able to introduce myself to every person in every car, making every person feel special, that's the 1950s mentality that we've brought into the modern age.
Are you finding that your audience tends to skew older? Is it people who are going who want to kind of reconnect with that feeling that they had maybe when they were kids and they would sit in the back seat?
It's everyone. It's them. It's them bringing their children to give them their first experience. It's teenagers who never had any idea that drive-ins existed. I mean, that's what's so great is that we're not just for one type of person or one age. Like everyone has a reason to have an experience here.
Josh, this sounds awesome. I can't wait to check it out. Thank you for joining us on ArtSpeed.
Thank you so much.
The Blue Starlight Mini Urban Drive-In is now open at 70 Northwest 29th Street in Wynwood. For more information, go to miamiurbandrivein.com. For South Florida ArtSpeed, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak, is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim frim sauce with the os and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot do de do ya do do.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food, teriyaki. When I was 17, I graduated from high school in a small Midwestern town. My older sister, Jane, had moved to Honolulu to go to a junior college out there. How she managed this relocation to the faraway islands, considering our socioeconomic circumstances and our conception of what our arc of life could be, was beyond me. She had moxie. She invited me to come visit during my summer vacation. Of course I did. It was comical how green I was, a cornhusker in the exotica of that garden of tropical delights. Honolulu was the first big city I'd ever spent more than a few hours in. The closest we got to a metropolis was on the days we'd go to see the Cubs play in Chicago, 40 or so miles to the southeast. And they were all day games since Wrigley Field refused, rightfully, to light its leafy arena back then. So cities at night were a rarity, too. My initial culture shock in Honolulu was eased when Jane took me to a place that served big, juicy hamburgers. After the second visit, Jane and her girlfriends talked me into trying it with teriyaki sauce. I liked it. Hawaii was not only beautiful, but tasty, too. Teriyaki, of course, is not Hawaiian, but Japanese. But let's not hold that against our Hawaiian friends. It has become one of the most beloved of all Japanese flavors, has crossed many borders, and claimed many fans around the globe. Teri literally translates as gloss or luster, and describes the sheen of the sauce that goes over the broiled yaki foods. Teriyaki is a simple sauce marinade that works well for meat or fish, especially those with some oil or fat to them. It basically is a combination of sake, mirin, and soy and sugar. I infuse one of the sauces I make with fresh ginger and lemongrass. I think I will begin adding some chilies to mine the next time I make it, come to think of it. You can marinate larger items like chicken legs and thighs for a few hours before cooking them, or brush some on the end of thinner cuts for the grill or broiler. You don't want to marinate anything too long before cooking it. The soy can get too strong. In this week's highly recommended cookbooks, I give a shout out to Chef Tadashi Ono's book, titled The Japanese Grill, co-written with the equally great Harris Salat. I ate at Tadashi's New York City restaurant and can also attest to his cooking skills. He is a bona fide grilling master, and if you like Asian flavors as much as I do, I think you will want this book. In it, he cautions us that the typical versions at restaurants in the U.S. are gummy gravies. He teaches that frequent turning and glazing is key to fine teriyaki technique. I also like the way he sprinkles a little shichimi togarashi on the finished meat or fish for an extra depth. Buy the book for details. We were in Honolulu again a few years ago. While we waited for a bus to take us to Makapu Beach, I noticed a billboard sign that said, Teriyaki Burger. I looked up further to see the place to obtain one. It said, Burger King. I went on to read that if I were to have a teriyaki burger there at BK, I could make it a part of my value meal. Despite the opportunity, I passed on that teriyaki experience and got on the bus. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Aioli. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we say hello to Mr. Andy Newman of the Florida Keys and Key West Tourism Council. Andy, how is it in the fabulous Florida Keys, sir?
The Florida Keys are fabulous, Ed, and there's fabulous events happening all through November and through the rest of the year. Heck, you know what? There's fabulous events happening in the fabulous Keys all the fabulous time. Let's get right to it here. First of all, through the end of this month, Ed, at the Key West Custom House. It's the Key West Art and Historical Society's presenting Depicting Hemingway, Guy Harvey Sketches the Old Man in the Sea. It's featuring 59 original pen and ink drawings which follow the storyline of Ernest Hemingway's famous novel. Now, through December 22nd, Ed, up in Marathon, you ever wanted to have an opportunity to have your holiday greeting card taken with a dolphin? You can do it at the Dolphin Research Center through December 22nd. Have your holiday photo shot with a dolphin. Participate in the Dolphin Research Center's Meet the Dolphin program, and you can bring your own Santa hats, reindeer antlers, or other accessories to use while posing. And, of course, the Dolphin Research Center's experienced photographers will shoot the pictures using a high-resolution digital camera. Now, through April 26th, back down to Key West we go, the 18th annual Sculpture Key West. It's a stunning annual art exhibit. It's showcasing the work of leading contemporary sculptors at Fort Zachary Taylor State Park and the Key West Garden Club at West Martello Tower. Still in Key West, through November 23rd, the Red Barn Theater is presenting Moments of Grace. This event actually began on Wednesday, and it's the second annual Key West Film Festival. It's showcasing films that exhibit excellence in storytelling, and there's a number of films, including Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, one of my favorites. Can we say, the arsonist was denied a bank loan? I tell you something, I know all those lines, Ed, because it truly is one of my all-time favorite films. Will Ferrell's great, and of course, the sequel is coming up. Let's not overlook, though, that this second annual Key West Film Festival, the premier attraction is indeed Mario Hemingway.
Wow.
Absolutely, Ed. Now, let's go back up to Key Largo tonight, talking about film, the Ocean Life Lecture Series at the Key Largo Cultural Center. It's featuring film and the ocean. It's led by Dr. Michael Giuseppe, and he's going to be discussing the impact of film on our cultural perceptions of the ocean. It's at the Murray E. Nelson Government and Cultural Center, mile marker 102 on that overseas highway. It is free, by the way, and open to the public. Now, for the ladies out there, there's the Ladies Let's Go Fishing annual Key Fishing University for Women. That's this weekend. That's in the Upper Keys, Alamorada, and also Tavernier. A great opportunity to learn or to polish angling skills. It's an award-winning seminar. It's been going on for 17 years, and they have 7,000 women graduates who have really had a great opportunity to learn the intricacies in angling. And, of course, the Florida Keys are indeed the fishing capital of the world. Best part, Ed, is that this fishing university is billed as the No Yellin School of Fishing. Down to Key West we go. Tonight, still, the South Florida Symphony is presenting the Master Concert Series, A Soul Unfettered. And that'll be at the Tennessee Williams Theater at 8 o'clock. And tomorrow, still in Key West, the Florida Keys Eco Discovery Center is featuring Magical Mangroves. Up to Marathon we go, in the middle Florida Keys, November 21st to December 14th, the Marathon Community Theater is presenting Mama Won't Fly. And Ed, back down to Key West, November 21st to the 24th, the second annual Chalk Fest. Now, artists from across Florida, they'll take their craft to the streets of Key West. It is being presented by the Key West Art and Public Places Board. And each day, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., both local and visiting artists will be using the promenade alongside the seawall of the Truman Waterfront as their canvas for intricate and very colorful chalk art creations. 21st of November in Alamorada, the monthly Moradaway Arts and Cultural District Third Thursday Art Walk. Back down the Key West, November 21st, Tennessee Williams Theater is presenting Clint Black. He's a prolific singer-songwriter. He has been long heralded as one of country music's brightest stars. Still in Key West, November 22nd to the 23rd, the Waterfront Playhouse is presenting, and the winner is, this is a concert of Oscar-winning songs. November 23rd, up to the Upper Keys in Alamorada, a free outdoor Pops in the Park. It's a family fun concert. It'll begin at 4 o'clock at Founders Park, which is mile marker 87 Bayside. Down to Key West the next day on the 24th, another installment of the family-friendly Sheriff's Animal Farm. I'll tell you something, Ed. People don't know a lot about the Sheriff's Animal Farm. It's open twice a month, always on a Sunday, between 1 and 3 p.m., They've got fabulous animals there that are being cared for. These are animals that have been abandoned. And there's cows, there's some ponies, horses, there's tortoises, turtles, but there are also some exotics. There's Kramer the emu, a family of Patagonian cavies, and of course, my favorite, the microphone cable-eating goat.
Sounds like you've got a story.
Yes, we do, but we won't tell it now. And a couple of other events coming up here, November 27th to the 31st of December, the Key West Bite Before Christmas Holiday Celebration, Art Key West. On the weekend of November 29th, there's a 5th annual Bay Jam Reggae Fest. That's in Isla Mirada on November 30th. The Fort Taylor Pirates Invasion, December 6th through the 8th. And then a whole slew of boat parades. And we're going to get to the end of the year. We'll talk more about that in December. All the reveille down in the Florida Keys to celebrate the dawning of 2014. And add much more information on these and so many other events in the fabulous Florida Keys, on the fabulous Florida Keys website. It is flakeys.com.
Andy Newman of the Florida Keys and Key West Tourism Council always knows where it's happening. Thank you so much, Andy, for all of that information.
Ed, always great to be with you.
We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our beautiful website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Andy Newman. Please call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye, enjoy,